Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks. This week, it's Geeks on Addictions. From video games to CCGs, we've got it all. Technobabble, and we hit the mailbag. For more information about news and links we talk about on the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Welcome!
Welcome back to Geeks On!
Aaron, PJ, Dog,
Mortal Geeks On!
All right, we've done that like three times now,
have we?
We need a different song.
Yeah. Sorry. It's the rerun. See, the Mortal Kombat theme is somewhere ingrained in my head from playing it. So
you need to de-ingrain it.
No, it's true. Whenever I walk into a dance club, if I hear that beep, it's just a matter of time before I start screaming Mortal Kombat. I just can't control myself.
See.
It's a little embarrassing.
That's why he doesn't date.
How was everybody's geek week?
Mine was excellent, Aaron. How was yours?
Well, did you do anything geeky?
Well, perhaps we should introduce ourselves first.
Okay, Don, why don't you introduce yourself and then tell us what you did.
Hello, my name is Don. I am a writer and video game professional in Hollywood, and I am a geek.
I am Matt. I'm an actor here in Hollywood, and I am a geek.
I am Peter, and I am a screenwriter here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
And I am Aaron Hendricks, and I am a filmmaker and designer here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
It's been like 10 episodes since we've done that, so I figured we probably should.
Yeah.
Can I ask you now, how was your geek week, Don? And what did you do?
I don't know, Peter. How was my geek week?
Oh, Peter.
Oh,
knows.
Yes. You know, something that's very appropriate to our topic today, which is going to be video game addiction.
No, it's geek addiction.
Okay, geek addiction, which includes video games.
Yes, because we're not talking about just you, Peter.
I felt that it was time to go cold turkey on video games.
Yeah, right? He lies. We had an intervention. We had to go to his house. We had to, you know,
they stole my
in.
Xbox 360 and gave it to Don. No, actually, I gave my Xbox 360 to Don. I thought that as long as I'm off the smack, I should give it to somebody else. And
dealer
went from a user to a pusher. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have a problem going cold turkey with video games, but I do have a problem when they're in the house. If it's a good game and I really like it, it's a problem.
So Oblivion has
Oblivion was hitting all my good game buttons.
Yeah.
So it was a problem. You know,
Oblivion.
Like, listen. Oblivion is the crack cocaine of video games, as far as it comes for me.
Gives okay. good game.
Yeah. So Don's having the beginnings of a
I started Oblivion. It was nice. I'm taking my time with it.
He runs out to the video store and comes back. I see him online, and he rents the game that he pretty much already has.
I bought it.
You bought Dead or Alive?
It was $40. I had like six other games to turn in.
That game is crap. It's craptacular. It's not even $40 crap.
I'm a little disappointed.
It's not even $40 craptacular?
It's, ugh.
Ironically, I don't remember if I talked about this in an earlier episode. I bought a game about 3 weeks back that I finally plugged in. The Xbox version of The Bard's Tale. Have any of you?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's kind of a comedy version of role-playing game.
Yeah.
Comedy role-playing.
Oh, my God, was it funny.
I heard it was
good.
Yeah. Really? I was cracking up playing
Xbox?
The game.
Yeah,
it's on original. Xbox and PS2.
Yeah, who does the voice in that?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's the guy from Evil Dead. He's known as the Chin. People call him the Chin sometimes.
Oh,
Bruce Campbell?
Bruce Campbell. I didn't recognize his voice.
Yeah, that's Bruce Campbell that does the voice in that, if it's what I think it is. And, you know, he is funny. I mean, I've played some video games.
I don't think that's him.
I'm pretty sure it is.
We'll look it up.
I got it as pure as, like, gameplay. Not so good. I actually got a little bored of the game. I did sell it. But as far as just writing and dialogue and delivery, this game was hands-on one of the best things that I've played in a long time. Hmm. I was cracking up playing this
game. Have you ever played Terry Pratchett's Discworld game?
No.
That was the funniest game I've ever played.
What? Don, you haven't played this game?
I don't think I had a computer that could run it at the time.
Didn't it?
Oh, is this,
no, 90s.
Is this a...
This is a
I think it was
late 90s, early aughts.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Because I remember which computer I had at the point in time, so I know it was late 90s.
Are you sure you weren't playing a very old game?
Yeah.
But Don, I thought that would be... I thought you were a big Terry Pratchett fan.
I'm a little stunned. And a little hurt.
Sorry, anybody else have a good geek week?
Actually, I got one other piece of information about my geek week.
Okay.
Okay. So a lot of you, we did our fan films episode, and one of the things we talked about was Shane Falu, who did Star Wars Revelations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, afterwards, he and I actually started talking, and we actually, he and I wrote a little fan film that he's put into the new competition at Atom Films called Pitching Lucas.
Pitching Lucas.
Pitching Lucas. And if anyone's interested in seeing it, they can go to atomfilms.com. There's a contest. They can see all the different things. And please vote for us.
Go, Woot. Geek Mafia.
So
go.
It's already uploaded. You can watch it.
It's up
right
there
now.
Right now on Atom Films. You can see it. You know, of course, you got to see a commercial before every one of them. That's the way they work. But,
well, you know.
Can you fast forward the commercial?
Nope.
No.
Blast.
Wait, can we eventually get the film and podcast it?
I don't know. I don't think we can until after the contest is over, but I'm
right,
not sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But actually, it's better if people go to the site anyway so they can vote and make us win.
Woo-hoo!
And the winner will be at Comic-Con.
That's cool. So he'll be out here for Comic-Con.
Yeah, I think he will.
He's a nice guy. We met when he came out here for do his G4 interview or Tech TV or whatever.
He's a great guy. You know, so, and it's amazing what he can do for like a short film in terms of computer animated graphics. I mean, it's just
so. This is another special effects.
It's got some good stuff.
It's got some really good stuff.
Yeah,
I can't wait to see it. I haven't even seen it yet. Just got up today, that's why.
Yeah, so you guys will see it after the show. And
very cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Shall we jump in? Anyone else got any Geek Week stuff, or shall we jump into
I've been reading Red Mars, because I just moved, so I've been reading Red Mars. It's a book
Ben
that
Boba?
I already own.
Yeah,
the first, I think it's Ben Boba.
It's the first of a trilogy.
Yeah, it's the first of a Red Mars,
is it
Blue
Kim
Mars.
Stanley?
It's Kim Stanley.
Kim Stanley.
And it's really good. I'm just getting back into it. I forgot, you know, it's one of those books that you read once, and you were like, yeah, it's pretty good, but no, so good. So
excellent.
Good to get Red Mars back in the head.
Red Mars.
All right.
How about some geek news?
Geek news.
Woo-hoo! Geek news. Woo! Geek news.
I will start this out with one of the new rumors. Okay.
Wait. You should give the rumor over to Aaron.
Yeah, just pass it to him.
Oh, I know Aaron's the rumor guy.
All rumors belong to Aaron. All
right, Peter. What is this rumor?
Okay, this rumor is that the iPod will soon be having films on it for $9.99.
Right. The rumor is that they're closing in on the deal.
They're closing in on the deal.
Right.
So,
do they have enough storage capacity?
What, an iPod?
I would think they do.
But it's like there's 80 gig ones out there.
You've been like when you told me to go out and get the... Oh, that was part of my geek week. You told me to go out and get this hard drive. Aaron told me to go get this exterior hard drive for my computer.
Yeah, FireWire drive.
And he's like, yeah, just get one. It's cheap. And I was like, how many meg? And he's like, what?
What
gig, man. Yeah,
Aaron.
Fact that you
geek card revoked.
Well, yeah. he does this to me all the time. You know, Aaron's always like, "Do you ever go on the internet?" It's very irate.
I mean, like, you know, do you know how many you have more than a couple megs in your hard drive, right?
Well, it's funny. As the four of us, we have that spectrum of tech savvy and tech attractiveness, right? Like, I'm a very late adopter, right? And Matt's currently considering buying a trebuchet.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Like, we all have very different schedules for picking this stuff up.
He's like, how many megs do I get in my hard drive? I'm like, you got to be freaking kidding
me. Yeah. So he was like, it's like $1 a gig.
Hey, Aaron, I'm thinking about upgrading from DOS to this Windows thing.
Buy a Mac.
You got to let it.
I'm surprised you didn't buy a Mac, Matt.
First version.
It's like a toaster. Yeah.
Nice.
So, right, so anyway,
so quickly, some of the studios have been concerned about preserving some of their relationships with retailers, you know, but it looks like it's happening, and you know, we're going to have to wait and see.
Right.
So the other thing is that there are reports of Apple's might be preparing to offer a living room oriented entertainment device later this year in time for the Christmas
season. That's cool.
Yeah, this rumor that they're going to be they have the media delivery system, kind of like Microsoft Media Center.
Get on the ball, SAG.
This is, you know, if you think about it, you know, again, I've said this all along. In 15 years, Apple may not be selling computers anymore. They may be just be delivering media to everybody.
I bet.
Because they're making more money off of that. iTunes is growing. When the iPod video grows up and becomes a full-on watchable portable device where you can get your movies and your television shows, that's going to be huge. And if you could use the exact same things you bought and have it go straight to your television a la TiVo, guess what?
Yeah, I have to agree.
Guess what?
I'm right there with you.
I just want to get a remote control.
Buy a Mac.
I don't know. I mean, like right now, there's that Senate on the Senate on the floor. There's a possible bill on the floor right now where they're trying to make it mandatory for all consumers to be able to buy their cable channels a la carte.
A bill.
It just seems a natural evolution would be to buy all your shows a la carte. You know?
Yeah. Interesting.
Just that sounds expensive. What, to do them a la carte? It makes no sense the way it currently is. I should watch a la carte.
Maybe seven TV channels.
The average is five. They had this whole thing on NPR the other day about the average is five. That's how many channels, and the rest
here's
is
a couple
completely
things.
Extraneous.
You probably end up killing a lot of shows. Because if you think you need numbers to get a couple advertising on there, forget about it. You're going to have to pull some huge numbers.
Absolutely, but the shows that are worthwhile might well get picked up by the surviving networks.
Yes, but we also have to keep in mind is that...
But there won't be networks. You'll be individually downloading individual shows. It won't matter what network there is.
Oh, I'm saying as far
as
buying
individual channels.
They're
talking about bundling network channels. Ugh. Like, you get the CW,
like,
you get
I just
Fox,
want Sci-Fi Channel, I want Comedy Central, all of my HBOs.
That just makes more sense.
You know, History Channel. You know?
Okay.
I don't need eight
you
MTVs.
You pretty much do that. You buy in packages, though.
Yeah.
Well, no, but the packages, for example, here's a big one. It's like if I want, you know, say I want my Lifetime channel, right?
Do you think it's
Lifetime is bundled with ESPN 1, 2, 3, and 4, right? Which means I have to buy four sports networks.
Let's just put it this
to get
way.
Lifetime.
If you don't think
I'm not saying I want Lifetime. It's
if you don't, if you think that Firefly won't get gets canceled and the Sci-Fi channel is actually going to survive that type of a business model, you're crazy.
Yeah,
I agree. Because the type of people who would watch Sci-Fi channel, the type of people who watch Firefly, and no one thought Firefly was worth putting on television. So say goodbye to any shows.
Don't entirely agree with that. Sci-Fi channel has been getting very decent ratings, whereas Firefly, nobody could figure out when the hell it was on.
Right.
I got to suspect.
The support it didn't have wasn't from the fans. The support it didn't have was from the network.
Right, yeah, but that's the people who are looking to see numbers only, and we're talking
about
big
numbers. If we're talking
about
network survival, that's something else entirely.
We'd have to do a little research to find out how this works, what the business models are.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd have to suspect that shows, you know, like, or channels like the Sci-Fi Network, would be getting a lot more support from people who are not watching it from, for example, ESPN. I mean, the money that you're giving to ESPN has got to be minimal compared to the money that people who are watching ESPN are giving to Sci-Fi. There's a lot more sports fans than Sci-Fi fans.
I don't
ESPN
think...
ESPN is huge.
I don't... Well, I know, but I'm using that as an example.
Ginormous.
I'm using that as an
like
example.
Massive.
Okay, how about the Knitting Channel? How about the
Sci-Fi?
Golf Channel?
Well, that...
There are 1,010 networks that nobody watches. The only reason why they exist is because whoever's providing them also owns the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, Don,
right. And says, if you want to carry that...
Don, I think what Peter's saying is that ESPN is big.
Yeah, I think that's what I was saying.
But because of that,
massive.
We get the Sci-Fi Channel.
Huge.
Because the ginormous. USA Network is pimping for the Sci-Fi Channel,
we get
Sci-Fi Channel. Because otherwise it wouldn't exist.
Sci-Fi Channel may not have gotten its foot in the front door.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you that much.
But now that it exists.
But I would say now that it exists,
exactly.
It's got a stronger appeal.
This is Matt, who's on the fence.
Okay, here's one of the things that cracked me up. There was a list of the channels... Oh, but broken up by minority, right?
Mm-hmm.
What minorities watch? Incidentally, BET, not on the list. Mm-hmm. Just saying.
What do the Hawaiians watch?
Hawaiians watch Sci-Fi Channel.
But they watch the Poi Channel.
The one that surprised the hell out of me was among gay men, who are a big TV network, a big TV consumer group, right?
And they're a TV network.
The number one most likely channel that they are to be watching is Comedy Central, followed very closely by Sci-Fi Channel.
Really?
What does that say?
Lifetime was like fifth on the list.
I'd like to see the numbers on that, please.
We should keep this rolling along.
Okay.
Let's move on to the next thing.
Moving. So, if you can imagine, a ballerina gracefully dances on a small stage. She's followed not by a male partner, but by a robotic arm manipulator that seems to sense her every move.
Ah!
Oh my.
For NASA Goddard technologist Vladimir Lumelsky, the performance shows the future of robotics. Basically, what this guy has come up with is robotic skin. It covers the surface of the robot. Basically, robotic receptors in terms of visual is not enough anymore. Mm-hmm. We're still bumping into things. We're still causing a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. So when you're informing in... When you're in formal environments, Peter Ringer, basically need an infrared skin that can sense. It can sense the air. It can sense everything. It's really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
It's like a sixth sense.
Yeah. Well, that's
because
actually,
it's not really touch.
That's actually my next thing. The skin will include more than 1,000 infrared sensors that would detect an object and send the information to the robot's brain. The brain would digest the information, apply reasoning, and react within milliseconds by directing the robot to move. So it can sense touch, it can sense resistance, it can sense pain in certain ways.
What are you doing, Giselle?
I can't do that twirl right now, Giselle.
All right, Don.
All right. Purse snatcher taken down by superhero.
Kick ass. Was it Bruce Willis?
Teresa heard something. I heard footsteps behind me and I stopped to turn, Teresa said. A strange man grabbed for Teresa's purse. They struggled. The man eventually got the purse and took off. What followed had Teresa doing a double take. In a flash, someone was giving chase to the robber. He had on a white tunic, a beige leotard, and tights and boots, Teresa explained. The man was also wearing a cape.
Bad call.
Is this from Heartstrings Romances?
It was Cameron Evan, superhero.
Oh.
Typically, we just deliver some pizzas dressed like this, and that's about it. But when we run into a situation like this, we're forced to act, Evan explained. Two other bystanders joined in the chase and eventually knocked the robber down. He got away, but not before giving up the purse. It turns out superheroes fit Galactic Pizza's mission. It's a socially conscious business, thus the electric cars to deliver pizzas, and all the shop's equipment is powered totally by wind. As the owner puts it, everything that we do is in the process of making pizza. We try to have as much good come out of it as possible.
So the deliverers wear capes and stuff, and this guy just happened to stumble upon it.
Oh, that is correct. And I have a link to the website with this news story, which has a link to the Galactic Pizza website.
Where are they based?
I wish I'd written it down. I actually think it might have been...
Metropolis?
Is there a Metropolis?
You'll have to check the article.
Is there a city called
Metropolis? No. You'll have to check the article.
No, but I thought they renamed a city. Never
the website for the pizzeria has pictures of two of the delivery people standing by the delivery cars they use in full costume. And they have
superheroes and superheroines. Is it like we're pulling on socks? And
oh, I gotta
see. All of them are sort of homemade, but homemade with a certain degree of pride.
Like good Halloween costume.
Yes.
Okay.
Not amazing Halloween costume, but
I'd order pizza from them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too. I would in a heartbeat.
And they're socially conscious.
So obviously you're safe.
Absolutely. Yes. So if you guys want to deliver a pizza, Geeks On endorses Galactic Pizza superhero
yes, we
delivery
do.
Service.
Although
and they are not
a
paid sponsor.
We'd have to check how it tastes, though. It's still good.
I wonder if they can send us a pizza.
No, I don't know.
By air delivery.
I think we'll send them the link to the podcast where you can see if we can get a pizza out of it.
All right. I have a couple announcements. The first one... Cleopatra and the Society of Architects is the new game out by Days of Wonder. Just got hit the shelves this week. And I don't know if the game is good or not, but the game is one of these beautiful bits and pieces. You know, Days of Wonder is known
for... What are some
of
the other things they've made?
They've done...
Are they Knights of Camelot?
Yeah. Shadows Over Camelot. Memoir 44... they've done a gazillion
are they
things.
Also architects?
Is this the pyramid game? This is the one where you're building your architects building this Cleopatra's like pyramid or her temple.
Okay.
And so the box actually flips over and becomes part of the temple, so the sides of the box looks like the temple and you put a board on top of that, and so it's got all these great pieces. One of the devices in the game that looks really interesting is everybody has a little mini pyramid with a little slot in it, like a piggy bank. And as you go throughout the game, different like contractors and people come up who are nefarious will try to tempt you into kind of doing corrupt
spending
wheeling
spending your gold on
and,
shoddy
yeah,
papyrus.
Yeah, paying people off and stuff. So and you can win the game by getting ahead, but you become more corrupt. And every time you do that, you drop a penny in the bank. But you never get to count your own bank or anybody, or you just keep dropping them in to your own bank. You never get to see anybody else's bank. So at the end of the game, even if you've won, whoever has the most corruptions out is the biggest is automatically is the person at the bottom of the list. So you might win the game because you went super corrupt, but if nobody else was as corrupt as you, then you automatically get
interesting.
Great. That's kind of fun.
Is this the same company that made that night game that you made us play?
No. By the way, yeah, we did end up playing, since you brought it up. It was another news topic. We did play Warrior Knights by Fantasy Flight Games.
Yeah. I thought it could be a good game.
Right. Well, first of all, we played, all four of us played. It's a long game. It's like 3.5-4 hour game. You guys were extra, let's see, I would put it, you were a little too...
Snarky?
No, I think you were... Yeah, I think you guys were a little too... There was something going on that night, but you guys were
too hard on it?
No, just hard playing. You guys were getting angry quick. And I can't figure out why the bad vibe was there, but you guys were getting frustrated within like an hour. We're trying to figure out how to play this game. Rules, relatively complex, and we missed some
rules. The rules were not complex. The rules were badly, badly.
There's a couple points...
They're not really complex at all. They're just hard to understand.
Right. There's a couple of rule points that we misinterpreted. Now, going back, it's one of them is relatively... was in our face. We just didn't get the connection. But anyway, I thought it was an okay game. It has a little bit of problems, but I think a house rule would fix the main problem, which is that the game ends... before the really good stuff starts ready to happen.
Yeah, the game stops before the game begins, which is I think a big problem.
Right. Yeah, that's a bigger problem. But you know, there's a lot of games that you know that we play that we never interact with.
For me, 3.5 hours of board setup is, you know.
Oh please, it was not board setup.
So anyway,
I don't think my reaction was quite as extreme as Matt's, but I agree with Matt. It never hooked me. I didn't really I didn't grow concerned over the gameplay.
Right. I think it's actually... I would definitely play it again with some adjustments to get the gameplay further into the game at the beginning of the game. Like the setup with a little bit more... almost as if we played like one or two rounds.
Yeah. None of the islands. No islands.
Right. I consider myself a fairly soft touch when it comes to board games. I've liked pretty much everything that we've tried so far.
Mm-hmm.
This one just didn't catch my imagination, you know?
I thought there were some great game mechanics. But anyway, that was, you know, it's not a full review. Exactly. But we did play Warrior Knights.
Yep.
Great bits.
All right,
pretty
so,
bored.
My next news story is about a new cell phone ringer that probably none of us in the room could hear. It's called the Mosquito, and kids have been using it in high school so that their teachers cannot hear it. Because as you get older, you... start to lose the ability to hear higher frequency sounds. So a company decided to capitalize on this by creating a device that would chase people away from stores and from loitering.
Kids
because
away from stores.
Kids, because they would hear this mosquito noise, this whine, and decide, you know, I'm not going to stick around here. Well, the kids, being smarter than everyone else, said, we know a way to put this to use. You know, people don't like it when we look at our pagers when they're going off, or they don't like it.
But it's a company who putting on the kids' ringer. It's not like the kids are like...
No, actually, the company is jumping on the bandwagon once the kids stole the ringtone.
Oh, they sampled the tone?
They sampled the tone, and they were using it. Now the company's going, oh, we better put this out quick because we're missing a big market. So basically, you know, the kids are in class and nobody can hear it. One day this teacher's like, what the hell is that? And all the kids were like, you can hear that? You know? So it's kind of interesting. You know, it's called the Mosquito.
Most schools have cell phone rules now that you can't have to turn them off in class. So they're trying to get around that.
What is going to happen when I have my kids? It's going to be like, no holographs in school today. Man. So this woman who works for Wired News goes out and she finds out about this phenomenon where people are inserting magnets underneath the skin of their fingers.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh. And what it's doing is it gives you a sixth sense. It gives you a very, very specific sixth sense. The result is a kind of magnet sense. People who've had the implant report that they can tell when a wire is live and when they're going through a magnet security scanner at a store, even when their laptop's hard drives are spinning up. So she talks about this. She basically felt her laptop. She knew where all the power sources on her laptop were. She could walk around the
house. Meanwhile, she erased her hard drive.
No, she did. It was such a light mic. Yeah, you.
I was thinking the same thing, you know.
But she would could walk around along the wall and run her finger along the wall. She knew where all the power lines in her house were. She said this didn't really seem very useful to her until she went to a news conference that was talking about the release of this new product that was running over a certain bandwidth. And she was looking at their specs that they had up on the board and the amount of current that she felt going through the wire was way more than what they were describing up there to get, you know, their functionality across. But she had no way of explaining it to the other news people, like, you know, these people are fibbing to us about how much, you know, bandwidth they're putting through it. So
Well, that's worth the surgery, being able to find power sources.
Well, it's
actually, I think it's really cool, you know?
It's the first cyberpunk implant.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And it's a neat device. I mean, you know, it sounds cool.
I'm not sure how useful it would be in my day-to-day life.
I'm not sure how useful it would be either.
I can find live
wires. There's medicinal reasons for implanting magnets, aren't there?
That's not a bad idea.
Every time I ever left an acupuncturist, they always had those little magnet balls that they jammed into my earlobes until I bled. You know, I'm sure there's a reason for it.
The only problem with that is
maybe
that,
they just didn't like me. I don't know.
You lean up against your, you know, something that you're not supposed to. Like, don't magnets affect monitors too? Am I wrong?
Yes, big time.
Yeah, so it's like you know, you got the magnet implanted into your back or something where your pain is, and you brush against your monitor, and suddenly your $1,000 TV is crap. You know,
that industrial strength electromagnet goes off and rips all the magnets cleared out of your body.
Dun, dun, dun.
Blood everywhere.
Magneto.
All right, Don, tell us the news.
All right. Well, Indian scientists say coffee protects mice from radiation and could work the same way in humans.
Really?
Coffee, specifically caffeine.
Specifically like 10,000 cups, right?
Researchers at India's Baba Atomic Research Center discovered mice injected with caffeine survived high doses of normally lethal radiation. George's team injected 471 mice with caffeine and exposed them to rays of gamma radiation, enough to kill most mice.
That's how those animals are surviving Chernobyl.
25 days later, 70% of the mice that received 80 milligrams of caffeine per kilogram of body weight were still alive. In contrast, all 196, which had been exposed to the same radiation but had not been given any caffeine, were dead.
Wow.
70%.
Wow.
Oh, damn. I thought it was going to be the chai.
Yeah.
Oh, nice, Aaron.
That was me.
Nuclear rockets.
That wasn't
run
me.
To Starbucks. Run to Starbucks.
That's what I think. I think when they, you know, abandoned Chernobyl, they just, all the animals found a coffee shop that was empty. They banged in and
they're all hanging out having lattes.
This is still, I mean, it's still in dispute. There are a whole bunch of people saying, you know, well, the amount of caffeine necessary would be extremely damaging.
So everyone in Seattle is going to survive a nuclear winter.
Yeah, pretty much.
They're going to be the only ones left.
The one solid lead they think they're getting from this is possibly new ways to help people survive chemotherapy. So there you
go.
That's
really interesting.
Interesting.
Aaron?
How you doing, guys? I'm great. How you doing? I just had testicular cancer. How you been?
This is just another announcement real quickly. A new Conan movie just goes into production in the early
2000s. Who's Conan?
I don't think they're even that far
Conan
into it.
Conan the geriatric.
People are talking about it, especially the video game industry, because there is a Conan massively multiplayer game, and those guys are really excited that
I can't wait.
That a movie is coming out, because it will only make their game more
better.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll alter the game to match the movie somewhat.
I
hope not.
Don't know, because Conan, I think, is supposed to come out relatively soon, and I don't know if that's... Warner Brothers is doing the movie. A couple of producers are on there. Director hasn't been picked yet. And there's a script writer also on board. Anyway.
Speaking of Conan the Geriatric, there's a great short story. I think there's actually a couple of them, and I can't remember the name of it. But it's basically about this guy that is Conan when he's turned 80.
Cohen the Barbarian?
Cohen, that's it. Cohen the Barbarian.
This is a Terry Pratchett
character. That's Terry
Pratchett. Yes, Terry Pratchett. You know, I thought that was really funny. And the concept being that, you know, he's lived so long, he's so good at what he does, that even at 80, nobody can kill him. So I just thought that was great.
I could take him on.
The short story Troll Bridge.
That's the one I read.
Features him.
Yeah.
Which is about Coen, the last barbarian, crossing a bridge guarded by the last traditional troll.
Yeah.
And it's about both them being very old and knowing this is the last time that this particular type of encounter will ever happen.
Yep.
And it's really touching. Also highly recommended with him, The Last Hero, one of Terry Pratchett's best books.
Okay.
All right, let's move on.
One more piece of news. Battlestar Galactica CD.
Ooh.
For the second series.
Season two.
Season out. Bear McCreary. And it's got a, you know, you can see the cover here is very slick, and we should all listen to it.
Like, steal it? The thing's all broken and shit.
Well, I've been moving.
Oh, okay.
So.
And he was really pissed off his roommate because he had to clean the bathroom.
Cool. I can't wait to listen to it.
For those of you who are new listeners, we did interview Bear McCreary a little earlier.
The composer.
We go through our archives, and you will find our interview with Bear McCreary.
He's ultra cool.
Actually, he was a geek for the day because he joined our entire
geek for a day
podcast. Yeah.
All right, geek for life, trust me. So, all right, let's move on to our topic.
Woo-hoo! Topic.
I'm not an addict. I'm fine. I have no problems. I don't know what you're talking about.
This is actually
I'm fine!
So, Peter, this is an intervention.
Yes.
We have a number of geeks online who'd like to speak with you right now.
Let me go! Let me go! I'm fine! Need to play World of Warcraft.
I love you.
Need to play.
No. Okay.
So, our topic is about geek addictions.
And compulsions.
And the difference between the two. You know, when does a compulsion go too far?
Yes. And some things that get geeks addicted.
Yeah. Now, where this topic may have come from is that about 2 weeks ago, we saw a news story about the first video game addict clinic for the video game addicts to go to decompress from video games.
It's true, and it's only going to get bigger, I think.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to see Video Game Gamers Anonymous. I'm sure we'll see that at
some point. I'm waiting to see the first one in the United States.
They exist at other places?
And we have...
That's where the first clinic opened.
Yeah, okay. So, all right.
But
so.
we also interviewed a woman who whose husband...
Right.
She was a World of Warcraft widow. Her husband left her because of an addiction online, and then actually met somebody. Matt's cousin. So we've had a little. We've dabbled in this briefly, but we wanted to expand it out to some of the other things you get addicted to.
So now let's start by saying, outside of video games, what would some other video game or some other geek addictions be outside?
Well,
of
wait.
Video
first
games?
Of all, let's define the addiction and what some of the similarities to some other like harder addictions are like drugs.
Okay. People are dying.
Well, I think
there is that.
Well, no, I think you know, especially the difference between a compulsion and an addiction is you know an addiction begins to affect your life in a negative way. So, yes, you may play lots of video games, but if it's really not impacting the rest of your life, then you might have a little bit of compulsion or you just need to, you know,
try a different
hobby.
Well, I would think dying affects your life a lot.
Well, we
use the addiction very loosely with this. I would actually go out on a limb here and say there are not that many geeks who are addicted to their obsessions. I would say most.
I don't know about that.
I want to go the other way. I'm actually going to say I think you're wrong.
Okay.
I think there's a ton of people out there. That's why we hear the term World of Warcraft widow. I mean,
but it's not a mainstream term. Most people would not know what you mean when you say that.
No,
football widow. They would know.
No, but I think there are probably more video game widows out there than. I think it's a new thing, and I think it's happening a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, when we had the Valentine's Day special, I think all the women here all said the one thing they really wish is that we would play less video games at night.
Point.
I mean, I would say any woman out there who has a guy who plays video games probably is thinking that a little bit.
But counterpoint, none of these women have left you yet. Insinuating this is not necessarily an addiction so much as a compulsion.
No. With us.
But it's
or an
still,
obsession.
Just because,
well, no. We're not saying that we're addicts.
No.
We're not.
No.
I'm not an addict. I'm fine.
Right. But just because you're not dying or people are leaving you doesn't mean that it's not affecting your life in a negative way.
But I would say that by the time it becomes noticeable,
mm-hmm.
it still hasn't necessarily crossed over into addiction.
So Don, by the time, I think Don has a little problem.
I think Don has a little acknowledging your addiction, yeah. though, Don. So by the time Don it becomes little, noticeable,
Don, are you saying that?
Are you
nobody...
saying you can handle it, Don? Are you saying you're okay?
Step one.
Okay. The only personal bout I've had with this was when Civ 2 came out. Okay.
Uh-huh. My ass.
I was in college.
4 a.m, one more.
I was in college.
I think we got to find the clip of Don on here saying it was 4 a.m and
that's
all
what
I
I'm
wanted
saying.
Was
this is
one
what I'm
more
talking
click.
About. This is what I'm talking about.
This is what you're just
that's
talking
about. That's the one time I've had a serious problem.
No, you were talking about with this with Civ 4 a few weeks ago, my friend.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
But okay. Okay, so, you know,
But Don, let me ask you.
Yeah.
Are you saying that you don't think that people are actually addicted to video games?
I think you're perhaps misunderstanding what I'm saying. I'm not disbelieving that there is no such thing as video game addiction. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is I think perhaps people are a little too casual in the term addiction when obsession is probably more accurate for what most people experience.
I think I'll buy that, but I looked onto the internet to find, you know, to research this, and I found a couple testimonials or stories that people were talking about, and I'll read them in a little bit. They really were like pretty intense stuff. That
I have to disagree, because I have to say, as soon as you've had people who have similar behavior, behavior that you've recognized that you've done but not gone as far as they have, mm-hmm. and those people have died, that's a recognizable addiction. They've taken it to the umpteenth step where basically they've died. That's an addiction.
That's like saying anytime you've had a sip of alcohol and you've heard of someone's liver rotting away, then you're
no,
a possible
No, but there
addict.
Is alcoholism. You know, I'm
well,
just
hang on,
under,
hang on, hang on.
You know.
Don didn't say that there's not addictions. He just said that people might be using the term a little heavy-handedly.
Right.
So that it's covering, you know, not just the category of people who have that, who are addicted, but a category, you know, but the
right.
social drinkers as well.
But he's also saying that this is just a compulsion.
But no, we can no, talk no, about not saying it's no. just a compulsion. Okay. Maybe he's we can saying talk about that there are compulsions and there are addictions, and that some people are addicted to video games and some people have a compulsion.
Okay, we spend too much time splitting hairs in the show. But the parody slash
you should see my haircut.
But maybe we can talk to some about some of the similarities, some of the other addictions like alcoholism and
sure. I'm going to say that there's a big difference between some sort of drug based addiction.
Because there's not that physical addiction.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think there's still a physical response that happens when you play video games, you play things, you know, gambling. There's still a programming that happens in your body that causes mm-hmm. endorphins to release, makes you feel happy. But it's not coming from a chemical, it's coming from the act that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all know that when the casinos in Vegas are really careful about how they program the odds and how you win on different things, like say the slots. They've figured out, you know, what is the exact number of times you need to pull this before getting a reward to keep you there.
Right.
You know, so they, you know, they're really trying to determine or refine how to basically get people addicted to
how
this.
To keep people addicted.
You know?
I would disagree on the level that I think there can be a physiological addiction component
mm-hmm.
In that any game, right? Any well-designed
mm-hmm.
game
mm-hmm.
is, especially video games, is supposed to trigger your fight or flight instinct to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
It triggers adrenal reflex,
mm-hmm.
which for a lot of people can be very mm-hmm. pleasurable and engaging and intense to a level that their day-to-day life doesn't provide.
Absolutely.
Correct.
That sort of environment can be very addictive.
Now you've got a situation though where I mean basically you've got a game that's that's designed to be very immersive. Mm-hmm. It's designed to really be very interactive and to really suck you in and get you involved in it. Okay. Well, that's fine, but you know, there are a lot of people who are able to go out and have a drink or two and it makes them feel good and they're fine with that, but there are some people who aren't able to handle that. I think it's the same way with video games.
Yeah, now gambling addiction, I believe collectible card games and collectible miniature games fall under the gambling addiction category, because I know people who've spent thousands and thousands of dollars on collectible card games and collectible miniatures. Oh, I think please. Hugh dropped a couple hundred on
pre-console. I spent thousands and thousands on stand-up video games until I got good enough at them.
But you know? But the different but the collectible card game thing has this strange. Well, first it's got the collection addiction slash compulsion that I have a little bit, but it also has the tear open the box or tear open your pack of cards and see if you have the rare card or the one you don't have.
It's the reward scenario.
It's the reward. It's that slot machine thing. You're
maybe you're
going to
get it.
Maybe you're going to get it. Maybe this time I got to plow through 10 of these packs in order to make, you know, to see if I'm going to get that one.
But also video games, you know, especially things like Civ or Galactic Civilizations, or they specifically work on that turn-based thing where every turn, maybe just one more, maybe just one more, just one more level. Just, I mean, because you're always going for just that let me just get that little high one more time.
And along those lines, I mean, they tie into something that's kind of like a mix between OCD, right, and a building thing, this feeling that you're building something, you're creating something, you're making something
better. Leveling up.
The whole leveling up. Well, it's not just leveling up. It's designing your stats and getting, you know, and for people who are really obsessive about it, like Lisa Lasik and I are both builders, you know. I mean, that it really is something.
Have you ever tried Civilization?
Oh, yeah. I love Civilization.
Oh, okay.
The only problem I ever had with Civilization was that it was a lot of fun until it got to a certain point where your civilization was so sprawling, it became really hard to get into that intricate building. It was just too much to do.
Yeah.
Do you guys know any collectors that have problems, comic book collectors, where it's gone so out of control that it's
every single comic book shop owner ever?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good... I mean, some point, I almost feel like a person who starts up a comic book shop is someone who doesn't have a place to put the comic books and just decides...
It seems to be sort of a natural evolution.
Yeah.
You know? Well, I mean, it's like we've all seen... We've all walked into someone's house where it looks like, you know, basically someone threw up knickknacks everywhere. They're just everywhere.
For example, Matt and I know a guy named Stan Freetag.
Oh, Stan, right? Stan.
Oh, good.
Who is a brilliant, brilliant actor and a very, very good man.
Yeah.
Who really likes toys.
Yeah.
Really.
To the point where
really
it's a
likes
like,
toys.
To a point where he has miniature dioramas all the way around his house.
Shall we introduce him to Lisa?
No.
Dear God, no. Never.
Would this be?
And
you
he's married and
this
he has
is,
a kid.
He takes it to a new level. These are not boxed up toys. These are toys... Okay, what's the best way to describe this? I walked into his house, and every single square inch that
floor
had
ceilings,
surface,
walls,
floor ceilings, bookshelves, washing machines, stoves, toilet seats, bathtub rims, the faucet in the bathtub had,
covered,
an, action
had
figure
an action figure on it.
Or action figure diorama set up on it.
I mean,
see, I would say that's an addiction that is going to affect his life, even socially.
He built
or personal
additions in the backyard to make more space for more dioramas.
Why haven't we talked to this guy yet?
Stan, I'll call him.
He moved, and all of those things were put away by his new wife. She said no.
Who collects dollhouses?
Yeah.
Which was really funny because I went to their garage and it was literally, their garage had about 22-foot ceilings and there was like a dollhouse stacked on top of a dollhouse stacked on top of a dollhouse. It looked like that old Warner Brothers cartoon with Bugs Bunny where he just keeps on stacking things and balancing at the top.
That's how they met and stuck together.
Oh, yeah. They collect things together. Yeah.
I'm seeing a horror movie in my head right now. I'm telling you. The dollhouses everywhere?
Yeah.
It's a horror movie. You ain't joking.
Yeah, well, so I think we all agree that there are addictions, and that these are addictive.
But for all of you people shaking your head at the video gamers out there right now, I ask all of you, take a look at your bookshelf and take a look at your role-playing books and ask yourself, how much space in my life are my role-playing books?
What are you looking at me for?
I have no reason, just saying.
He's got the Riff collection.
I believe each person in this room, with the exception of Peter, has a secret... large portion of their storage space taken up.
My whole
closet is a long time ago.
Peter's just more efficient. Yeah. That's all.
But
my vampire shelf is just ridiculous, you know?
So one of the catch-22s, though, of this sort of discussion, though, is one of the things you're doing when you're making video games is you're trying to make something that's more and more interactive, that's more and more it's just a... ties into what people love more and more.
Well, they're immersive,
which means
just like drugs.
More and more addictive in a weird way. Yeah. You know, not, and again, keep in mind, most people can handle it. You know, we're not saying, you know, we're not like these crazy people talking about, you know, video games are addictive and we got to keep them away from our kids. Most people can handle it, you know. But it is interesting how, you know, you get certain games and they're dead.
Well, the video game you can't overlook that we have to bring up in this discussion is, of course, Evercrack and World of Warcraft.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Okay. Now, both of these, the MMORPG added the new level of having to keep up with the Joneses.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now that you're playing with friends online, and Aaron complained about this a lot, if you are not playing as much as your friends, you will no longer be able to play with your friends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because they will outdistance you, and what are you going to do then?
Yeah. Right.
No, go ahead. I mean, I was just saying that Kat had brought up this point that with video games, what they have become is just like drugs. Drugs allow you to escape your perceptions in this world. Mm-hmm. Video game escapism is about escaping into someone else's imagination. And
there are role players who have this exact same problem,
right,
where their entire social life begins and ends in a role-playing game. They go to work. They have Dungeons and Dragons on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. On Thursdays, they do Vampire. On Fridays, it's free-for-all. And then, of course, the weekends is a Serenity role-playing game.
Darkon. I think
Smarty Librarian
brought it up. Yeah. Darkon looks... I want to see this documentary, but it's basically about a group of people in Maryland who every week or longer have an enormous LARP where they actually go in. They have huge battles.
Right.
And they're building castles.
And, you know, I think it is an escapism thing, and I think that's one of the reasons why World of Warcraft and EverQuest is... attracts certain people and keeps them on because you essentially have a secondary life with people. Like, you are an important person in this world. You are, you have more friends in this world. You have a romantic life maybe with somebody in this world. You are rich in this world. And, you know, if you've got all that, then why, you know, leave your office and go out and spend time with your lame friends and your shitty car and your, you know,
not nearly as pretty.
Right, exactly.
And that's, you see that also in the competition that people have where, you know, you just got owned and, you know, I mean, it's like all this,
it's forming its own language almost.
Yeah,
now.
That's true.
Yeah. You know?
Well, the lead speak grew out of other things, not games.
Well,
partially
no.
games.
But now it's,
you know, yeah. Pwned came from Warcraft?
Yeah.
No.
I didn't know that.
No, it didn't come from
Pwned came from...
I thought it was Evercrack.
No, it was Doom.
It was Doom.
It was online first-person shooter games.
Yeah, because you would tell people you just got owned, but when you type it, you'd hit the P because you were typing something.
I just read that it was the first Warcraft game a developer misspelled owned in it.
Yeah. That is incorrect.
Anybody can send a link to that, then...
Because people were saying Pwned when I first started work at a video game company, and that was a long time before World of Warcraft.
It's just not World of Warcraft. Warcraft 1, the first real-time strategy game that was about 15 years ago.
I'm sure someone's trying to link it to that, but I think it came... I also have heard that it comes from just typing so fast.
All right, I'll see if I can find a link.
Yeah. Most of LeetSpeak comes from mistyping.
Let me actually read a couple stories that people have talked, you know, testimonials, I guess, of what people have experienced with addicts in their lives. Okay.
Are these all video games?
These are all video games. So
this is the only one that Peter can identify with.
Yeah, well, I you know, definitely identify with it. But these are all basically reactions to on a discussion board where someone said, I think this is bullshit. People aren't addicted to video games, and these are what people said. So one girl talked about how. From someone who's going through this right now, you clearly have never been in a position to deal with it from a loved one. Either that or you are simply a video game nut yourself. My husband has essentially turned his little pseudo-life with his computer and his video games into the priority of his life, and I truthfully don't know how long I will be able to remain in a relationship like this. He is on it every single spare second he gets, often staying up all night, never coming to bed, or coming to bed at 2 to 4 a.m. in the morning. He can no longer even watch a movie with his family without running to the computer every few minutes to move the mouse so he is not kicked off the game.
Wow.
You tell me that's not addictive behavior?
That's a massively multiplayer game there. Yeah.
Right. Another one is, I can tell you from personal experience that video game addiction is real. My husband is addicted to online games and talks more to the guys that he plays with than to me or his two children. He knows more about the lives of the guys he plays with than what goes on every day in his own family. He cannot sit in the living room and have an evening, not even 1 hour, spending time with our kids and talking with them without falling asleep or yelling at them because they interrupted his television watching. His idea of entertaining the kids is to pop in a movie and go back to the computer.
Oh, God, this is just sad.
I've tried to set some boundaries with the computer playing, such as he cannot play it when I am home because he is not aware of what the kids are doing. Our children are young. Or to wait until the kids are in bed. These boundaries are broken on a day-by-day basis. The kids and I moved out last year, and it took him 2 days to realize we were not at home.
Oh.
He is on the computer less than 5 minutes after he gets home from work until 1 to 3 a.m., then gets up at 6 to 7 a.m. to go to work the next day.
Yeah,
the only breaks he takes are for the bathroom. Sometimes he won't even eat dinner with us. He eats it sitting in front of the computer. If this is not an addiction, I can't think of one.
Now, in college, I had a roommate who got into MUDs, which were first massively multiplayer
online. I played ZMUD. I was really bad at it.
So many of them out there, so... You know, through the school's computer, we telnetted around and we found all these MUDs. And, you know, he got on it and started playing. And I would wake up in the morning and he would be on it because he was there all night. And I'd say, well, I'm going to class. Are you going to class? Oh, yeah, I'm going to class. I'd go to class, come back. He was still on it. And he almost failed out of school. That's all he did. In fact, we were thinking of calling the school and ratting on him because they didn't want their system being used for MUDs and mushes. Wow. We were going to rat on him, but they caught him anyway, and they cut his account off. But thank God, because he would have been completely kicked out of school.
Actually, I still know someone who still plays a MUD.
Oh, yeah. What? They still exist?
Apparently.
Yeah. I played ZMUD, and I really got into that game. And one of the things is I have very good vision. I have very good vision. And I remember the first day that I played that for almost 2 days straight. And I stepped off of the computer and I looked at my fridge and it was like double vision.
Yeah.
And I remember like going, okay, this has gone way too far. Never again.
Along what you were saying, Aaron, I have one more story here.
Okay.
Okay.
Depress us more, Peter.
My husband's 22-year-old twin sons are addicted to role-playing games. They got kicked out of college after one semester because of it. They've lost several jobs because they play the game all night.
The role-playing game?
This is actually role-playing games. Well, this is internet stuff. This is she's talking about video games, role-playing video games. They've lost apartments and got kicked out of their mom's house. She raised them because they refused to do anything else. They're belligerent when interrupted from gaming or when asked to be responsible about doing their chores or taking care of their finances. As their stepmom, I took all the games and locked them in the attic for months when they were with us. They sulked and slept for months. When they returned to their mom's, they were agreeable when they were off the games for a couple of months. They came back to normal, basically. When the games were returned, the irresponsible behavior returned.
Why did they return the games?
They didn't, but I think they went back to their mom's and got the games back. You know,
mom but, needs a little education.
Well, they're 22 also, so
kick them out of the house.
Christ.
Jesus.
The twin with us was facing going to a homeless shelter or living on the streets when we took him in. Yesterday, we went to his mom's to get his games because he said he wanted to sell them at a game store.
My ass.
When he returned, he was surly and refused to tell us how much money he received to pay off his overdue bills. When I located the receipt later, it showed that he got $242 for the games in a store credit and promptly redeemed it for a $199 new gaming device.
$199.
Well, some of these are a little older.
A little older. PS2.
So I have to ask, what are your addictions individually?
I don't have a geek addiction. I mean,
have you?
I have some compulsions. I'll tell you. And
I've seen your Starfleet battles folder. That's some.
Yeah, so
that took some work, man.
I have a closet full of games.
Okay.
And some of them are old, like Starfleet battles. I've owned for more than 20 years.
Right.
So it's a big book now.
See, I think of you more as sort of like the 80s party user of games. You're like, hey, there's X, let's try X. Oh, I have this new drug, it's called cocaine. Oh, really? Cocaine? That's really interesting. How about some heroin? Oh, yeah, I'll try that. Because he keeps on skipping from one to the next.
But I have a closet full of games, and it's, you know, it's packed tight in there, and I'll probably have to sell some to fit some more in. But it hasn't spilled too far out of the closet.
Yet.
And I have some Star Trek things, you know, some books, but that's not too crazy. And I have a lot of video games, but
All right, this is the first time we've been in our recording studio, mm-hmm. our multi-million-dollar recording studio, in quite some time where I haven't seen a GURPS book out, so...
No, there's no, but there's the Warrior Knights thing over there, but that's...
Well,
know.
We discussed that,
yeah,
so
exactly.
That's okay. All right, I'm buying it.
But I did not... things that I have seen, I do have some collectible miniatures and a couple of collectible card games, but I didn't... I only had, like, you know, 20, 30 or, you know, 20 or 30 bucks...
Of each of them.
I did not fall under into the trap of the collectible card game. Don, did you?
I don't think I bought enough to call it even an obsession.
Okay.
I got into a little bit with my cousin.
Collectible miniature like Hugh Eris and Hugh, I think, logged a couple hundred bucks in those.
I logged about 20
I think
bucks
the most I've ever spent on a role-playing game was Vampire.
Yeah.
Like, just buying the rule books, you know?
In terms of money, video games are the number one where I've spent most of my money. Secondly would have to be role-playing games, and tertiary would be card games or
and
miniatures.
None of you got into the comic book?
The only addictions... I collected comic books when I was a kid.
Me too.
Severely collected them?
No, never to the point where it affected my finances.
Yeah.
I actually stopped buying them when I realized, okay, these are too expensive for me to keep buying.
I stopped buying them when my parents stopped buying them. I mean, it was like, this is actually money now.
Peter, did you ever have like a collectible addiction at all, or at least an obsession with any geek?
You know, video games have always been it. I mean, like, you know, I played a game called Island of Kesmai. It was one of the very first.
I played that.
I used to love that game, you know, and it was like $6 an hour.
I'm an Illyrian sorcerer.
Oh, it was a pay game?
It was a pay game on the internet.
On CompuServe.
On CompuServe. Right. It was like $6 an hour, you know, and my parents kept me off it. And I was that way with video games. I mean, you know, one of the things I was reading when I was reading some of these stories, this one girl talks about, you know, he spends all his time trying to find a damn save point. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, I remember that, like, Mom, I got to find a save point. You know, it's like that type of stuff. And, you know, it's at least now I'm old enough where it's kind of like, just turn the damn thing off.
I have had two
video
game addictions that have been problematic. One was Civ 2. I got an incomplete in one class in college because a Civ 2 just made me.
I would say that's an addiction. If that was affecting your life big time.
But it wasn't entirely because of that, but it was a contributor. I'll admit that much. And I haven't been – it hasn't caused me to miss any deadlines, but I've been late on my own schedule writing some things because of World of Warcraft.
Hmm.
Like, I get back home from work. I'm too tired to be creative. I just sit down and play World of Warcraft because it's there.
Right.
And I don't have to put my own creativity into it.
I listed down sort of the geek video games that just first snapped to mind that were the ones that sort of hit me. Street Fighter II. Huge addiction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Green Beret was one of the first video games I ever got addicted to. Donkey Kong, Pac-Man, of course. Duck Hunt. The Crescent Hawk's Inception was one of the first.
You got addicted to Duck Hunt?
Yeah, I did. I was like all in the shit. Baldur's Gate 2, Z-Mud, Diablo. Huge addiction to Diablo.
Oh, I remember you were so into Diablo.
Yeah, StarCraft, Tekken. Oh my God, the amount of hours that you and I logged on Tekken, Don. Come on,
but it never got in the way of our life.
No, that's true. We just were very tired.
We just got really smelly and retired the next day.
Knights of the Old Republic. I played it three times. You know, all the way through doing everything.
I did 45 hours and ended it in a week. So. Yeah.
WoW, of course, Galactic Civ now has become my huge addiction, and then RPGs, comics, horror movies, and I was a little bit of a geek, like, in terms of learning how to blow things up when I was a kid.
This is actually also part of the emerging geek addiction problem, which is one of the reasons why I think video games have never been that much of a problem in terms of addictions, is that a lot of people have the addiction or the compulsion to finish something.
Yeah.
I have to finish it. Once I've finished it, I'm okay. Okay.
Yeah, I don't have to.
So, you know, in the past, a video game was 30 hours. You know, it was 20 hours. Now we've got games that are, you know...
Oblivion, you get up to 200 hours, apparently.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you can play that.
Or Endless, World of Warcraft.
Okay, well, how about... Let's head outside of video games for a little bit.
Okay.
Let's take a look at Trekkies. Okay?
Definitely an addiction.
Is it damaging to their life? I mean, I
probably not.
Is it just an alternate life? Is it like the LSD?
Is it
of,
alternate lifestyle?
I don't think the Trekkie. I don't think it's the same thing. I just don't think it's.
I mean, if you're collecting and it's getting in the way, and you know, or something like that, maybe. But you know, just being a Trekkie in itself, I don't think.
Well, I mean, like, let's take a look at the perceptions of Trekkie to mainstream America is not necessarily a positive thing to have associated with yourself, right? Are you being self-destructive by wearing a Star Trek uniform to your job at Kinko's every day?
Yeah, but people don't
insisting that everyone calls you commander.
That gets into the differentiation between crazy and eccentric.
Yeah, that's a delusion, not an addiction.
Yeah, I think it's the LSD of the addictions. You know, it's just they're going off.
Well,
you know,
it's not necessarily delusion. I'm sorry.
Oh, nothing.
It's not necessarily delusion because they don't believe they're in Star Trek. They simply believe that they're trying to emulate a lifestyle.
I think I would disagree with you that a few of them believe they're in Star Trek.
If you're being called commander and you've got a phaser on your belt wherever you go, I think there's something inside you that actually believe that somehow
it's gone
you're
round
part
the bend.
Of. Yeah.
Okay. I just don't. I don't think
you're
that,
like okay.
That's a hard one for me to make a stand on.
I just don't think
I'm
that.
Just throwing it out there.
I don't think that these things that for example Star Trek is as big of an issue because it has the advantage of being like the short video games. I mean, it's not like you can sit and watch, you know, Star Trek 24 hours a day.
Yes, I mean, you could. I believe that you could be addicted to things that are Star Trek. I mean, there are literally 500 or 600 hours of Star Trek.
That spend money compulsively on Star Trek items.
I'm sure that they do that. But I'm just saying that it's not. I don't think it's as immersive because, frankly, you know, once you've seen everything, I mean, in most people who are going to become addicted to Star Trek,
you play World of Warcraft, and how many times do you see the same crap over and over again?
Telling you, you don't understand. I'm telling you that you
played World of the same characters over and over.
I have never seen everything in World of Warcraft, not even near it. I mean, there were like
were four blades of grass, which he definitely did not see.
It took weeks to see just different realms because you just weren't strong enough to get there. When you got there,
would now be a bad time for me to tell you that the Scourge is attacking in World of Warcraft?
No, I have
patch 1.1 is out, and undead are loose in the realm and are attacking the cities even as we speak.
Avramar
is under siege.
What, like
if you
random
if you're
players
not high
or
enough
what?
Level? No, they've the undead the undead scourge.
Yeah.
Is attacking all the major cities on World of Warcraft right now.
I understand that, but what I'm asking is, are these players doing it or
no NPCs?
It's an NPC scenario. They're gating in, and the NPCs are on a time scale building influence and forces.
Okay.
And there are these fortresses flying over certain portions of
the game
world right now. And as they reach critical mass, if the players haven't beat down those guys, they are going to attack the cities and kill everyone inside them.
How dare you, Don, try to start that back up.
Okay. I'm fine. Here's my thing.
He says he's fine, but I see his crazy eyes.
I don't have...
We'll call you. Come to me.
I must get back. No. I don't have a problem once I'm off something.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, like, I'm you know, when I have a game in my house and I'm playing it, I get compulsive. But once it's out of my house and it's out of my life for a couple days,
I don't know. I'm looking at your eyes, Peter, and they're still a little bit Charles Manson, helter-skelter.
All right.
It's only been a few days.
Let's move on.
Well, one other thing I just want to touch on real quick.
Okay.
Which is just some of the obsessions that lead into superstitions with gamers or just habits, like some things that I've noticed real quick.
Mm-hmm.
People playing two-player games, right? The left player must always be on the left. The right player must always be on the right. It really upsets people to have the controller for the right-hand side when they're sitting on the left.
True.
Well, that's because it's just wrong.
But it's not. You know, there's really no, especially now that we live in a wireless society, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, but it's also just because they're used to playing towards a different certain direction.
I'm just saying. Role-playing games. I don't know if Peter did this, but you roll that 20-sided and it keeps coming up with ones. You switch the 20-sider. Okay. I've met lots of people that have developed very interesting superstitions with their dice.
Yeah.
To the point, I did not know this man, but I've heard stories of this man. If a dice kept rolling bad for him, he would take that dice, put it in the microwave, close the door, and then line up all his other dice in front of the microwave door and watch them make them watch as he nuked their brethren. All right?
Oh, I see.
He did this multiple times, too. It's something he did.
My players used to come up to me and go, "Which is the good ones?"
Yeah.
And I,
I knew people you couldn't touch their dice.
Oh, yeah. Don't touch my dice. Yeah. Don't touch my dice at all. It's one of those superstitions. You know, it's... Well,
that's one of the things that Vegas has the same superstition.
Yeah, man.
That's
straight out
it's
Vegas.
It's a compulsion thing, you know, and it's really surprising to me how many of these have come up across the board for gamers everywhere.
It's all about winning.
All right.
All right, let's move on.
So we have several things we want to do before the end of this show, so I'm sure it's going to be long again, but we wanted to bring back one of our old favorites.
Chock full of love.
One of our old favorites. Yes, we're going to do Technobabble. Matt, do you have the Technobabble in front of us? Why don't you read our situation and explain what Technobabble is to
our... All right, Technobabble is... We're going to present a scenario. Mm-hmm. And that scenario is going to have certain problems.
Mm-hmm.
We, using Technobabble, will solve these problems.
A la your favorite science fiction show, such as
Battlestar,
Star Trek. Star Trek was probably the worst offender of this. So.
I think this is definitely very Star Trek-y.
Right.
So Ensign Johnson is in trouble again. He has become addicted to hydroxian quasars, a very rare and expensive drug that has a side effect of bestowing nearly godlike omnipotence on its users. As he's now run out, he's started to going through painful withdrawal, becoming enraged, and started turning his powers on the rest of the crew and your ship. How do you resolve the situation before he decides to end his own misery by ripping apart your ship and jettisoning your entire crew into outer space? Use Technobabble.
Okay, so on this one, I didn't actually have a whole lot of Technobabble in mind. Just for some reason, it did. And actually, I'm hoping this will actually even make sense in the cold light of 8 o'clock night.
We've all done this. All
right,
so, no apologies.
Roll it, Peter.
Okay. It took me a moment and loss of three of my crew members before I realized that Ensign Jones was clearly receiving our thoughts and unintentionally turning them into reality. The solution was obvious. We clearly had to stop thinking of anything dangerous until the drugs wore off. However, telling the crew this was kind of like telling them not to think of a pink Smarsmadonth from the planet Seringi. As soon as the words came out of my mouth, we lost Ensign Decker and Medical Officer Perot. Luckily, on our last mission, we had to travel back to the 20th century to Earth to stop the Coromana invaders from disrupting the quantum time flow and creating a time feedback loop which would have destroyed the human race. As we left, we took with us a box of ancient Earth artifacts, which included a book called Psycho-Cybernetics, which posited that the brain often reacts just as viscerally to an imagined event as a real one, and talked about how to program the brain to think positively. Also, luckily, the box included several adult-themed movies by a 20th century artist named Jenna Jameson. It was primitive technology, but I had my science officer cook up a device to scan the films into memory and hook them up to our holodecks. Then the entire crew practiced some positive imagination, focusing on the same film at the same time. Well, let me tell you, the results were quite fascinating. We were all transported into the film, and our experiences became quite, realistic for the next 8 hours.
What are you doing?
Until Johnson made it through his withdrawal. I'm glad to say that we all made it through it just fine, with only side effects being about 24 Jenna Jamesons and an equal number of male porn stars roaming about the ship for several weeks. But needless to say, it was a problem we were quite happy to handle on our own.
Okay.
Wow.
Got it.
Yeah.
I see.
Nice.
Yeah. So...
Matt.
All right, here we go.
Up on deck.
Matt's sitting here the whole time going, what are you doing?
While Ensign Johnson was hooked up to the new experimental Zoron plow generator, allowing us to plow a magnetic field for rare colloidal particles, he experienced this sharp shock and went spinning off the land in the middle of the transport module. The guy's, it's pretty shook up. I mean, he weighs what, like a buck 10 or wet?
Right.
But he busts his head open, and it's hours before he's up and running again, and then the weird stuff started happening. Johnson, who had to say, who'd always been this sort of subpar Dancha player, is now playing it backwards, while at the same time doing amazingly extensive Andarian call-out equations, and they have forearms and two brains. Long story short, he goes on this geometric increase of ability and intellect, and before we realize it's the hydroxian quasars doing it, and we polarize the hull, the damage is already done. You know, he sucked up enough quasars to basically create anything he wants. Meanwhile, Ensign Johnson is walking on the hydroponics to prove his godlike might and getting into a competition with the replicator, seeing who could make loaves and fishes the fastest, and telling First Officer Long he can be, quote, without sin, even if what he F's off with is green and has suction cups. But suddenly we get two breaks. First of all, the fact that he has omniscience means that he knows everything. Not only that, he knows where everything is. Everything. Now, as you know, Johnson is obsessive compulsive. And before he realizes he can just change himself, he's busy coming up with a plan to restructure the known universe because it's a mess and needs to be neatened. Now, this means he's going to break us down to our base molecules and start over, but in the meanwhile, it gives us a few moments while he's occupied. We had Lieutenant Jiggles, you know, the one with the... Yeah. And he had her go by and tell him how great and godly he was. We didn't tell her about the plan, so he couldn't pluck it from her mind with little she has. Second break is that we realize that Johnson's DNA is on the transporter unit from when he bashed his head at the start of the whole debacle. And that, as long as we have his base DNA sequence, we can transport him from one location to another, reforming him exactly as we had him in the buffer. So simple as that, as he's gearing up for phenomenal cosmic power and is distracted by Jiggly and the rest of the universe, we throw on the juice and zip-zop, he's just Johnson all over again. Needless to say, he's on bed rest for a while. We put out a marker on the mining zone. The first officer is still acting a little bit strange, but that goes without saying.
God, this omnipotent beings.
Whew. Yeah, the pain in the ass.
Damn Me? Them.
All right. Well, I knew that we were in trouble, deep trouble, when I could hear the bulkheads of my ship moan and creak as Ensign Johnson mentally squeezed the ship for kicks. I've never been able to figure out why torturing starships have been a universal pastime for godlike creatures. But it's been going on, but it's not been an ongoing conversation with me and my good friend, Captain James T. Kirk. Mm-hmm. In fact, JT, I call him JT because it drives him crazy, we have co-written a book together about this very same problem. How to deal with gods, omnipotent beings, supercomputers, and planet crushers.
Okay.
Now, there's usually two ways to defeat one of these types of folks. The first one, quote, find the power source. They're usually located behind a wall or hidden in some ancient talisman or pendant, but it's usually nearby and very unprotected.
True.
Unfortunately, this wasn't going to work in our case. So, second way of bringing one of these biggies down, JT and I call the Silver Tongue of Destruction. We kind of need to work on that.
Destruction.
See, one of the things we've learned is that you can talk most of these baddies into self, if not total, destruction, especially with supercomputers and androids. So there I was, face to face with Ensign Johnson. His eyes weren't glowing red as usual, now they were kind of a solid black. Have you guys noticed the change in omnipotent beings these days? No red eyes. They're all solid black.
I miss that.
Yeah.
It was a classic.
Don't know. Anyway, all I had with me was my phantom array gun and sharp wit. Ensign Johnson, it's me, your captain, I shouted.
Sorry, Captain. You and your ship are no match for me. I am all-knowing, all-powerful, and indestructible by your puny beings. Prepare to die.
Wait! Are you telling me that an all-powerful, indestructible being such as yourself could never be defeated by a human like me? And if I could defeat you, you couldn't be the all-powerful being that you claim?
Of course! You humans are no match for me. Prepare to die.
Wait! Before you kill me, let me ask you one more question. If you are indeed all-knowing, then you can see the future. I ask you this, Ensign Johnson. Will I defeat you? I could see it in his eyes. He paused.
Wait. If you defeat me, then I can't be the all-powerful being. And if I'm not the all-powerful being, then how can I see into the future? But you defeat me. That means I'm confused.
At that moment, I could see his black eyes phased to normal. I knew I had only moments. I drew my fag and fired.
Your what?
My fag. Phantom starts with an F.
Oh.
Johnson dropped to the ground. See, the future can't be changed. And an all-knowing, all-powerful being... Wait a minute. If he's all-powerful, then he could have changed it. Well, then the future would have been different, and he wouldn't have to have changed it in the first place. Wait, that doesn't make any sense. If he knew he would... Wait! Woo! I almost did that thing to myself. Whew, that was a close call. Anyway, I defeated him. Took Johnson weeks to get back to normal, but thanks to my book, How to Deal with Gods, Omnipotent Beings, Supercomputers, and Planet Crushers, humanity is safe again. In stores now.
I wish all of our listeners could have seen that dramatic reading.
I thought that was great.
There was this whole interpretive dance going along with the thing. It was really impressive.
It was really good, Aaron.
I'm stunned.
I loved it.
Applause. All right. Right, well, as you know, Ensign Johnson has had some repeated problems with the ladies in the past, and still has some feelings for Ensign Jiggly. Yeah, Jiggly. Jiggly, as you all know, is Balarian, okay? What you may not know is that Balarians emit a low-level tripirion radiation. Excuse me. Let's try that again. What you may not know is that Balarians emit a low-level tripirion radiation that nullifies Hydroxian Quasar diatype emissions.
Really?
True. Sadly, the radiation only protects the Balarians themselves, and only in a very small area. It acts like the protective stench around a homeless man that keeps away teenagers with a gas tank matches and too much time on their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Ensign Jiggly will use her feminine charms, all six of them, to lure Johnson into the engine room of my ship. As dedicated listeners may recall, my ship is a light cruiser, a cruiser with a hull made of solid light. Like all light cruisers, my prime energy source is a quadraphotic generator supplying quadphots to my neophotic engine. Unlike most cruisers, my chief engineer has a ridiculous addiction to Mrs. Maxwell's industrial-strength replica coffee, the type that only can be brewed in a grade 7 industrial tri-fusion replicator device. Mm. Thanks to that addiction, I have one grade 7 industrial tri-fusion replicator device in my engine room.
Really?
By running a subphotic trifusion stream between the coffee machine and the generator, the trifusion replicator can start drawing power off the quadraphotic generator. But that's madness, I hear you exclaiming hysterically. That would cause a retrophotricyclide fusion arc and instantly invert your ship. Well, that would be true, of course.
Of course.
If Ensign Jiggly wasn't in the engine room as well.
Oh, right.
Tripterian radiation, remember? Duh. As long as she stands between the two of them, the arcing energy will be dampened like the enthusiasm of a high school freshman discovers that a sex education course will be taught by an elderly fat man who will be extolling the virtues of abstinence, campfire sing-alongs, and cold showers. Now, Johnson will instantly recognize that the retrofotricyclicide fusion arc is meant as a trap for him.
Nice.
If he steps inside of it, his hydroxian quasar diatype emissions will be canceled out, rendering him powerless. As he starts laughing maniacally at the simplicity of my plan and launches into his villainous monologue, I sneak up behind him with my transdimensional transducer and hit him upside, not across, but upside the head, knocking him unconscious. After that, we just hook him up to the blood cell batteries. Running all his blood through them should clean out the remaining hydroxian quasar traces out of him like an old man eating chili.
Yay! Woo-hoo! It's been a long time. Peter and I didn't really do put a lot of techno back.
I wrote this bloody word and I can't pronounce it now. Retrophotic trilectide. That's it. Retrophotic trilectide.
You have to be able to read what you write in these techno babbles.
But it's a hard word. It's a very, very hard word.
Retrophotic trilectide.
Thank you.
All right. So before we close up, we want to get to some mail because we've abused our mailbag by just ignoring it. So
you've been abusing the mailbag.
No, we can't postpone it one more week.
Alrighty, the first one is from Michael, a common geek nerd, self-proclaimed. Hi geeks, after seeing the supervillains that are going to be in Spider-Man 3, I had two questions in mind for my favorite geeklings. Number one, what are your guys' favorite superheroes? Two, are you happy with Marvel's choice for villains in SM3, that being Sandman, Venom, and Green Goblin?
Yes.
There's three of them?
Yes.
I think that's a terrible
mistake. I personally like Venom, though I'm a bit worried about how he will come into play. There can't be any Secret Wars, and I didn't like the way Ultimate Spider-Man did it either.
I think it's a terrible mistake. Whenever they start adding too many villains...
Mm-hmm. Jump the shark.
It's a problem.
You need one.
Yeah, one
two
is,
works for me. Well, I think two is okay.
I don't think so. I think
only
two
if they're complementary.
Only works,
yeah.
Now, listen. Two only works if one of the villains is a romantic character.
Yes.
Okay. Otherwise, you're throwing away, or if one of the villains is like just not even a storyline.
Exactly what happened in X-Men.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, but yeah, X-Men is a good example where you
Batman.
Had
all the Batman movies are
too many stories.
No, I think the second Batman movie worked.
Yeah, no, but the second Batman movie worked only because
one was a love
the romantic interest was
I'm willing to
replaced,
see
Vicki Vale was replaced with Catwoman.
Yeah, and she really wasn't a bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, yeah.
It's debatable.
So, but again, read.
Big mistake.
Read the villains again.
Sandman, villain, and Venom, and Green Goblin.
Okay. Any one individually would be just fine.
Just fine. And those are all men, and that's none of them are going to be romantic interest unless this
you
thing
don't
takes
know that.
A turn that we have not seen in the comic
exactly.
book ever
they
before.
Could be romantic interests for each other. Just saying. There'll be a whole new twist. What are your guys' favorite superheroes on the other side of things?
Spider-Man, actually. Spider-Man is my biggest hands-down.
Wolverine.
Really?
Really?
Well, look at me.
All right. Fur.
I am a beast.
The fur.
Why'd you identify the beast?
Because
he's not blue.
Wolverine's. Yeah, I'm not blue.
I don't really have one. I don't read enough comics.
That's why you're so cynical.
I kind of want Batman. I want Batman to be, but I haven't read
Kitty
enough.
Pryde.
Oh, Don.
I like Kitty Pryde.
He's the such Chris, a big man, but he's such a one. Little Japanese anime on the inside.
Discreet!
So we're going to get yelled at by all the people who are like severe comic book readers who've got all the like cool indie.
Yeah, the ones who have much more cooler tastes than we have.
Oh, actually, I always wanted to be one of the knights from Checkmate, but nobody knows what that or man,
I know what that
or
is.
Mandrake the Magician, but...
Oh, he was the only cool one in that supergroup they teamed him up with in the 90s.
Oh, okay. I'm talking about the original 1920-10.
Yeah, they stole him. They
oh, really?
Stole all of these 1920s superheroes and made them into a short-lived superhero cartoon.
Like the Phantom and stuff?
Yeah, Phantom. It was Phantom, Mandrake the Magician, and like three other 1920s superheroes. I can't remember who they were.
I have one. Came from the forums, and I just wanted to hear what you guys say about this. Hi, Miguel. Oh, this isn't it. Sorry. This is from Chewbacca. About two friends and I want to get into tabletop role-playing, and we are trying to find the right game. We want something rather simple yet fun. Do Geek Lords have any suggestions?
Tabletop RPG?
Yeah, like a role-playing game.
Okay.
Simple. I would say the one that was sent to us, what is it called, Strange Worlds?
Yeah. Very simple.
Yeah, we already read through that. We haven't played the game yet, but there's several modules for it. It's almost like a universal role-playing game in a way.
Really easy. Just make sure you go to the middle part of the book to read it first, because they have all of the character creation stuff in the middle part of the book.
Right.
And they sort of define certain things like what your type of character class is in the middle part of the book, and they should put it at the beginning, but read the middle first.
Well, that seems to be the new trend in role-playing books.
Read the middle first?
They should read the middle first.
Go to the middle, define the middle.
A lot of
the
superhero role-playing games lately have been putting world information in the front section and then gameplay aspects.
It's not world information. It's like guns and stuff.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, it's
that's a little bizarre.
It's out of order.
I would say the game system that's very much like it is Serenity role-playing game.
Yes. Serenity's a little more crunchy.
Exactly like
Serenity's really a little more crunchy, a little more pain in the ass.
It's a role. We're just talking about role-playing games.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you said tabletop.
Tabletop role-playing games are
also
just
tabletop means pen and paper.
Also, what's a hell of a lot like it, and which is a hell of a lot of fun, is the original, not the D20 version, the original Star Wars role-playing game. Real easy because everybody knows what universe you're operating in already, and then it's kind of fun to make a Wookiee, make whoever, and you can operate and do whatever you want.
I would say these aren't easy. The only reason why I bring these two games up is because I think you can download both of the basic versions for free. But here, the Hero System, which if you buy the book, is huge. But I think there's a light version of Hero PDF that you can download.
Yep.
And GURPS has one. Yep. And
the Strange Worlds has one.
Strange
as well.
Worlds has. Yep. So the basic forms you can download and start role-playing right away for free.
And
we'll put links to our website.
And if you also want to be tabletop role-players but you want to do something good, go to the Palladium website and buy a book from Palladium and also save their company.
Right, but that would be the absolute non-easy game to buy. I mean, that is...
But think of the good karma you're getting
saving
true.
Save Palladium!
There's
some new
Palladium.
Role-playing games that are out. I think one's called Wheel of...
Wheel of Time?
No.
Fortune?
I can't remember what it's called, but there's a couple...
Fish?
Caracasa?
Couple new role-playing games that are coming out that apparently are amazing, and I don't know any of them. I should put a link to them if I find them, though.
Yeah.
You've failed us, Aaron.
All right. Joshua Pelton has said, Zan once, in our argument about Zan versus Jaina.
Oh, yeah.
Who Zan once turned into an ice rocket. I think that trumps just about anything Jaina could ever think of. That's it.
That's true.
That's all he said. Okay. He also has a quote here, which is, there is no problem that cannot be solved by the proper use of explosives.
Yes.
I have a letter here from Moonwolf from the forums. Hey, Geeks On. I just finished listening to episode 2309-1905, Geek Art Old Movies, and had a wonderful idea for the Geek Store. Would it be possible to have the great punchlines that were created to be used as a slogan on some shirts and stuff and have Aaron create graphic representations of it? I would be more inclined to support and buy creative side of Geeks On. Thanks for all the laughs and great conversations.
Yeah, when we write a great one, we'll...
Exactly.
Yeah, we're due for a revamping on our Geek Store. I'm sure we'll get around to throwing some things out there soon.
Yes.
I wrote him back and asked him which ones he would talk about, which ones he would like.
Yeah,
he
some
said,
great ones.
He said, for example, the Geek Punch lines where it's like, you know, lie until you open the box, I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that quite works on its own.
Right.
Until you know what it is.
I still want to do like CDOS run, run DOS run.
That's not already done.
We can't do things that people copyright.
Yeah.
It's not copyrighted. I found it on 6 different t-shirt sites. Mm. We could just make it ours and put Geeks on in the back.
We should just make ones that are creative that we've done.
Why?
Here's one.
Why create when you can steal?
Dance
so
straight.
Much easier.
Here's one from Matt.
Wait, what?
Matt.
A different Matt.
Oh.
Just got done listening to your 612 episode, and thanks for the glowing review of your comic book DB. That's the guy who has the new website, comicbookdb.com, which is the IMDb of comic books. In fact, I just saw that his that site got dug on dig.com, so they are probably flooded with people now. So
that's awesome. Congratulations.
And
you
yes,
get some good stuff on that.
He says, and yes, I'm a big fan indeed of your show. And you had asked for suggestions of American indie comic books. And my suggestion is Supermarket by Brian Wood, put out through IDW. It's a story where your average pseudo-liberal rich girl and has her life ripped away when her parents, a former Yakuza and former Swedish porn star, have their past catch up with them. And they get killed.
Oh, that's Yakuza.
Yakuza.
Former Yakuza and Swedish porn star.
Okay.
Yeah. Swedish porn star?
Porn
yes.
star.
It's up to issue 3 out of 4 now, and it's purely brilliant. Also, there's Tricked by Alex Robinson, which there are 350 pages of graphic novel, which follows around 6 people whose lives begin to intermingle on a journey towards redemption, but all of their pasts and lies begin to catch up with them. He likes the catching up type of... books.
Well, you know, who doesn't?
It's a total mind fucked. It's very great stuff. But thanks again, guys. Keep up the great work, Matt.
Woohoo!
That's it. That's all I got.
I have one last one from Smarty Librarian, also from the forums. Hi! Hey, I love the X3 stuff. One comment, though, mostly directed at Don. Hello. I've always found the Scott Jean love story to be really boring. I never felt that it was the heart of the X-Men saga.
You have no soul.
Many fangirls agree that the unrequited Logan Jean is much more interesting. Nothing draws
He's
in the ladies like a good unrequited
comic.
Love story featuring the hunky Wolverine. Ew.
hey, the fact that girls dig guys, you know, some girls apparently dig guys with hair, I think is great.
Harry 5-1 guys. Damn straight.
I'm just always surprised there's no love for, like, you know, the idealist paladin. You know, the Cyclops character who tries his best to keep things together and make the better tomorrow.
The problem is he doesn't have much character. He's very he's very thin. And they don't flesh him out in ways that are interesting. Yeah,
well,
look,
the movies, they sure don't.
It's been a while since I've read the comics, but my memory of Cyclops was that he was always just more real.
Is Wolverine
and
circumcised?
That is probably a little more boring. When are you going to do another BSG show? I'm curious about your takes on the finale and potential directions for BSG. For season 3.
I say before the season begins, we should have a wrap up and talk about the last season and what our thoughts are.
Maybe we'll get Bear back on.
I'll make sure I get the DVDs before then and watch all the way through.
Yes.
Well, what we should do is also maybe that could be our opportunity for the recording us listening to watching BSG. Do the MST3K to Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, maybe.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe. And she asks us about Darkon, but most of us have not seen it yet. So we will touch on Darkon in a future time.
Yes,
Darkon, the movie, we'll put a link to it for the trailer. I have one more, Matt from Michigan. Different Matt. Hey, guys, just finished listening to your 666 show. Here's a little piece of trivia for you. And he sent a link to IMDb. Harvey Stevens, who was Damien in the original, plays a tabloid reporter in the new one.
Mm-hmm.
So keep your eyes peeled.
And that was just about it. He had three credits on his resume otherwise.
Yeah. Well, you know, not everyone wants to be actors.
A child actor.
It's like he did one thing 6 years after Damien, and then that's it.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a kid. He didn't decide he wanted to be an actor.
I want
to
know what happened to Short Round, man. I know he was, like, studying at USC last night.
All right. Well, that's it for me. Any other pieces of mail?
That's it. I have a fun link.
Don's a piece of mail.
That I think that some of our listeners will greatly enjoy. The link is to a website that covers the religious affiliations of superheroes. It's dedicated entirely to collecting information on superheroes from every line of comic books, outlining major points in their character histories that their religious beliefs are explored.
That's really cool.
And it's very comprehensive. And it's got like everything on there from Olympian beliefs of Princess Diana, a.k.a. Wonder Woman, to the possible Kryptonian beliefs of Rao for Superman.
Rao, the lead character in Mark of Crete?
Apparently Rao is a Kryptonian sun god that has been alluded to in some comics. Or perhaps that he is Methodist. That has been hinted in some comics.
I think
of the
he's Methodist. Books. Or Lutheran.
The comic book DB guys should go and talk about integrating some of this information into their...
They have some very comprehensive stuff in there, and including some... Like, I had no idea that Zatanna was a Wiccan. Hmm. No idea.
Interesting. So,
go fig.
And do they have put reference to where they got the information?
They put references to all the major comic books where they this stuff is uncovered.
Oh, I can't
and
wait
it's,
to check it out.
They actually have a couple collages in there where they have like all the Catholic superheroes, all the Jewish superheroes, all the Muslim superheroes. It's pretty entertaining.
Huh, cool. All right, I'll definitely check that out. Interesting.
There you go.
All righty. Anything else?
That's it.
Excellent.
We're done.
Have a good Geek Week. Geek
Week,
everybody.
Excellent Geek Week.
Have a fantastic Geek Week.
Bye, everybody.
Rock it out.
Geek it out.